Yeah, I'm here, Rashi.
Dad, is that you?
Yeah, I'm right here, Rashi. Are you feeling any better?
Oh, Dad, I'm so sick.
I know, Rashi. I know. Rashi, Halloween was 2 weeks ago, and you've not stopped eating candy since then.
I know, Dad. It was wonderful.
No, it wasn't wonderful. Every time I take the candy away from you, you had a spare bag of it. Now you're sick in bed with a massive tummy ache. And this is the price you pay for gluttony, I'm afraid.
Dad, there's something that could help me feel better.
What is it, Rashi? You want some Pepto-Bismol?
Oh, I want an O'Henry.
No, you can't have another candy bar.
Yeah, Daddy, just a Baby Ruth. I'll be fine.
No, Rashi, no more candy.
Daddy needs some Nerds.
Some Nerds? No, you're not having any Nerds. You're not having any Nerds, no Pop Rocks, no Crackle Bars. No, what is that? What are you trying to shove into your face? A $100,000 bar? Rashi,
it's
no.
It's $100,000 and a Jolly Rancher at the same time. Oh, God, it's bliss.
Rashi, give me the candy. You're
I'm going to throw up. I don't care.
No, Rashi,
it's give so
me...
good, Dad.
Rashi, take the candy.
Oh, Dad, it's so good.
No, give me the candy.
Watch this, I'm going to tear open this packet of Kool-Aid.
No. Rashi, come Oh, man, you threw up all over me. Rashi, no more candy, no more.
Just give me them M&Ms.
No.
Hey, this is Misty. What the hell happened to you?
I got vomited on by our son. I've got Nerds in my hair and sweet tarts on my beard. And
oh, that's what that is. Oh.
I think there are a couple of junior mints down the front of my shirt.
That's a technicolored nightmare.
No. I swear, every year we say we're not allowing him anywhere near the candy. And he gets out and, you know, a little bit of trick-or-treating is all right. But he goes on a guerrilla assault through the neighborhood. And I don't mean gorilla the ape. I mean, he's out there with knives, bayonets. You know, he's taking this stuff
berserker.
Forcibly from little kids smaller than he is. And he's small. Yeah. But
that's a small kid.
Yeah, I know.
Infant pillowcases everywhere.
Wow. Kid's bigger than he is also. Nobody is safe. He goes door to door. He went through old man Putterson's house. He just smashed through the
Putterson
window.
Putterson never has any candy, though.
I know. But it didn't stop him from smashing through the window. He went in. And he took like some cheese slices out of his fridge and some of those ice blue mints from that dish Putterson has.
They're all
the door.
Stuck together in that dish.
I know, but it doesn't make any difference. Rashi was after plunder this year. So, I mean, he's been in bed for almost 2 weeks with a stomach ache.
Well, do you want to bathe before we start here?
No, I'm just going to finish up the last of these junior mints I found in the
shirt.
Oh, come on.
That's sick.
They're barely even moist. You know?
Oh, you know what that reminds me of? That theater stint you did where you had to clean up. They had the mentally challenged kids come in.
Oh man. And that with a mouthful of junior mints. Thank you very much.
So it was Paul's job to clean the theater after all the kids left.
Yeah.
And they had this day where mentally challenged kids were there. And this one girl, he walked by her seat and she had spent the entire movie basically with her little hot hands, junior mints to the chair.
Oh, yeah.
And he had to clean
God, that was like a lifetime ago. That was the Little Fox Theater in San Francisco.
How old were you? Do you remember?
17.
Wow.
My first job. And
I didn't know that was your first job.
It was my first job, my first paying job.
Well, right? You know what my first job was? I was a waitress at a wedding hall.
You were 14.
I was 12.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my
God.
Yeah,
I was 12. I used to work till 2. I wasn't supposed to, but I was paid under the table, and they didn't care, so I was a good worker. And
God, you're like a Disney princess who's like, you know, born into hardship. You're like Cinderella, you know.
Born into hardship.
Born into hardship.
Well,
you know,
got my groceries somehow.
Scrubbing the castle
Seriously,
floor.
Seriously, you're laughing, but I'm serious. If I wanted a yearbook, I had to work for it. That was just the way it was. It was
Snow
never
White
easy
is how
for
old?
My folks.
Like 11 or something when she's scrubbing?
Snow White had it easy with her dad. It was when her dad died.
Well,
both my parents were alive. I still had to friggin' work, so...
Yeah.
But it was fine. I mean, and I actually enjoyed it. You know, you grow up really fast that way, but you learn a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, but we were talking about challenge girl.
Well, my first job was working at the Little Fox Theater. I was like 17 or 18. I just started college. I was in San Francisco, and it was right around this time. It was between Halloween and Thanksgiving, and I had to get a job. And I went to the job board. And there were two jobs that interested me. One was an ocelot feeder.
Wow. How'd you not get that?
Yeah. I did have it once for one day. And
did they want it to eat you?
I basically had to take the meat into a room, throw it in a room, and run. There were five ocelots in a room.
Why did you not keep that gig? Why would you not?
Because I only had as long as the ocelots took to eat the meat.
So it scared
to
you.
Get
That's
out of there.
That's what I was asking you.
You know, ocelot, it's big, you know? Ocelot's a big cat. Not
a
big cat.
I didn't think ocelots were that big. I thought they were about as big as Muggsy.
Yeah, but they're, you know,
like 40 pounds.
Yeah, but with sharp claws and teeth. And besides, there were five of them, and five ocelots add up into one jaguar.
Why in the hell would you? Was it at the zoo, or was this a private residence?
Private residence. This woman had five ocelots.
Somebody owned five ocelots.
Yeah,
that's asinine.
Yeah, you know what? I later gave that job to Daffy Duck.
Yeah,
I did an episode of Duck Dodgers where he had to get all sorts
really
of weird
did.
Jobs, and every
hysterical.
Job he had was a job that I had at some point.
Wow,
including the ocelot feeder.
God. That's funny.
Yeah. And okay. So after feeding ocelots didn't really pan out, I got a job at the Little Fox Theater in San Francisco where they were doing, there was a musical, remember a musical called You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, some years after that, it came out with a sequel called Snoopy, and they were doing by different people, but still about peanuts. And
Peters.
They premiered it at the Little Fox Theater, so like you said, you know, they would bring a lot of kids in to see the show. And there, after this one performance, there were these kids who were mentally challenged. And there was one little girl who spent the entire time just forcing Junior Mints into her seat. And I had to go over and I had to scrape off like this solid plate, like a Junior Mint burger that she had left on the seat.
Wow.
You know, pry it
off. I laugh because it didn't happen to me.
Yes, it didn't happen to you.
I've had a lot of gross things happen to me, but that is not one of them, I'm proud to say.
Yes. Well, you know, the Junior Mint, I like, that withstanding, you know, I like the Junior Mint. It was always my candy of choice. My brother, Bruce, is a big fan of the Milk Dud. But
yes, he is.
I find the Junior Mint infinitely superior.
I'm a big fan of your brother Bruce. He's a hella cool guy.
He is.
He is great.
He's a wonderful guy.
He's hysterical. We had this big personal joke with his brother Bruce, and I don't even know how in the hell it began, but it was about penny farthings and how polite times used to be. And penny farthings are those giant one big wheeled bicycles.
Yes.
You
yeah.
know?
Did
I talk about it on a podcast? Oh, I did.
Me and Emily still to this day go
falling. You
what,
know,
a
so
falling
I
on
find
the penny
this
farthing.
Picture. So somebody sends me a picture, and I don't even remember why, of someone falling off a penny farthing and hitting dirt, and their face is all smashed up like a little and on the ground, and they like caught the picture at just the right time, and so I put it on his nephew Matt's Facebook. And I was like, falling. And Bruce responds and he goes, oh my God, that picture is so old. And besides, I didn't fall. I was listening for a train.
Yeah. That's
he's so funny.
That's a good Bruce.
Wonderful.
We should get him one of those bikes for Christmas.
No.
Surprise him with them.
Nope.
Penny farthing.
Is that a need or a want?
It's a need.
Well, yeah, penny farthing's
just
a need.
To see him fall off it.
Falling?
Maybe we could just run, film him. Yelling falling as he falls off it.
Any good penny farthing costumes on Halloween?
No.
No.
The penny farthing.
No, but we had some great costumes, yourself included.
You know,
Mr.
the penny farthing.
Thank you.
I just might say the penny farthing bike was a symbol of the village from that TV show, The Prisoner.
Yeah, The Prisoner.
A show about a guy who wakes up in a mysterious enclave with no idea how he got there, which I've never seen before in my life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Falling.
So Ezra Walker was here on Halloween. Did you have a good time?
Oh, I had a blast.
We did
everyone
too.
Everyone was here, actually.
What?
Everyone was here.
It was pretty crazy.
It was a
gathering of
ghouls and ghosts and...
Ghouls and dandies.
Ghouls and dandies. There were a few dandies here, weren't there?
It was great.
we actually had some honest to God...
Excuse me.
Bless you.
I know, I'm still sick.
Man. We had some actual movie monsters here.
We had two movie monsters. And a gerbil.
And one of the movie monsters had a theme to his own costume.
Brett Mike Myers.
Yeah.
Brett Michaels Myers.
One of my
Myers.
Favorite costume ideas in the world.
And then the other one was
Derek
in Tyler. That was Derek Mears, who you guys would recognize as playing Jason in Friday the 13th recently in the reboot. And then we also had How Cool Is Our House on Halloween? Mike Myers from
Myers,
Halloween.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Who's our dear friend Tyler Mayne.
Yeah.
And both, I can't tell you, nicest guys. I hate to disappoint you creepy lovers, but
they're awesome.
Nicest guys you could ever want to meet. And we love them both. And we were lucky. We just happened to be the house at which they chose to spend Halloween this year.
So it was a good night for Halloween. We had all sorts of interesting folks over. Oh, and
not to mention our front lawn.
Our front lawn
was amazing.
Yeah, so
Gasworks.
We made our house into the house the Joker built, and I was the mastermind. I was the idea guy behind it, because earlier this year, around summer, we were talking about Halloween.
It was around your birthday.
Around my birthday, I said, you know what would be really cool? If we could put a giant Joker head on the front of the house and really make it into like Arkham City or the house the Joker built. Because one of my favorite comics of all time was an issue of Detective that Batman and Robin running into this big brick house that looks like the Joker's face. And I thought, boy, that would be really cool if we could actually do that or something like it. So we got in touch with the folks at Gotham Public Works. And once that idea took seed, we thought it would be fun if we actually had the Joker on duty, like threatening kids and handing out candy.
Oh, and it was successful.
So, we got in touch with our good friends Donnie and Tara at Gotham Public Works, who dressed up like the Joker and Harley Quinn. And
they look fantastic, by the way.
They terrorized the kids and handed out candy, and Donnie was a wonderful Joker.
Oh, my God.
Misty, you and our assistant Tyler painted the fabric, and so we made it look like the interior of a green and purple and white circus.
We had
tent.
Green and purple and white carnival striped fabric in the foyer. When you walk into our house, there's a small room, this little foyer, and we took carnival striped fabric and hung it in there so that when the Joker answered the door, all the kids would see was the Joker. He was in his own private cell.
Yeah.
But it was all Joker themed, and we had taken pumpkins. And instead of carving jack-o'-lanterns, we actually took pumpkins that from Michael's and cut holes in the front of them and then put Joker masks on them.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Oh, you know what the Joker would do is like he brought a mask and he had like a Wily
Coyote
mask. We should have given him one of the Joker masks and had him take off that.
That would have
been a natural, man. But
next year.
Well, he had Wily Coyote or Porky Pig and Porky Pig is kind of creepy looking. So, although
it's Jody from Amityville.
Yeah, but then you're doing Professor Pig from the comic books. So.
Oh, yeah, but he spells PYG, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Still, it was and Harley was outside with a high striker. One of those. That's actually what they call those ring the bell things, the test of strength.
Yeah, with the mallet, and it goes up. And
yeah, well, we actually got one of those for our lawn, and kids were coming by and hitting it and everything. I feel weird because we had a party, and I was busy hosting, running around, making sure everybody had drinks or making drinks or putting food out. So I missed most of the trick-or-treaters. And although every time I ran over, like Joker would be like harassing adults and giving kids treats and everything, and I would just like yell call the police and he would shove me back
stuff like that. That was fun.
So that was really cool. And
you should have videotaped it. It was fun to watch those kids trick-or-treat. Yep. Some of them were
really
nervous.
He made some of them cry.
Some of them
wouldn't even come up to the door. Harley would take the entire time convincing the little girl or something to come up to the door, and then the Joker would scare the crap out of them.
Yeah. Well, that's the way
exactly what we wanted. So what happened was when the kids would walk up to the house, there were a bunch of... We had these huge Joker playing cards with the original... Is it Jerry Robinson?
Jerry Robinson.
Jerry Robinson image on it. So we printed them, and they were five... I know they were because I ordered them 60 inches. They were 5 feet tall, almost as big as me. And... We had them stuck like haphazardly on the front of the house, and then I had 3.5 foot tall Ha, the letters H-A, like in red comic book with the black outline. And so it said Ha 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 Ha, and then we had those Jokers, and then we had green and purple up lighting, like landscape lighting, because I bought these park hands on Amazon, and we put gels on them. So there was green and purple up lighting, then Harley was on the lawn with the high striker, and she would convince the kids as they came up, like if they rang the bell, they would get a rubber chicken, wax lips, a whoopee cushion, a bang gun, or mixed nuts with a snake in them.
Nice.
Yeah. And then she also had Airheads that she could give to anybody who tried. And then she would guide them, they would start with her, and then she would tell them to go to the door, and the Joker had, what was he giving away? A full bar house.
It was Snickers, full bars of Snickers, Chuckles, Laffy Taffy, or Slapsticks.
Yeah, so everything
went
was
with
laughing.
A wacky theme for what he was handing out. We could have had him hand out dead smiling fish, but
Not the same.
Not the same. We are the full bar house, and if you put the kids through that much trauma... We have to take a candy bar from the Joker.
But we had grown-ups that were actually coming back at like 10:30 saying, my wife told me I needed to get over here and see the Joker.
Yeah.
Specifically,
sent over.
I mean, Tara's
we're
great...
We're told to come see this. Are they still around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And it was, like, really cool because we've never been that house.
No, but
we've always done cool stuff, but we've never been that house. This year we were that house, and I liked being that
house. My philosophy is if you terrorize the kids, if you put them through the trauma of meeting a dead ringer for the Joker who kind of acts like the Joker.
Oh, he's so good.
You better give up. So you don't do it for a fun size Junior Mints. You do it for a full bar, a full big Snickers bar.
Well, you're always... Yeah. Full bar house Dini anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what I object to, you know, and you know about this because I made fun of it in last year's Jingle Bell, was is the dads. The dads have got the con game going, and you always fall for it because you never it doesn't register until too late. And what I'm talking about is like usually like the young dads with the baby who come around, you know, trick or treating. It's like, hi, it's baby, it's baby Jeffy's first Halloween. We're trick or treating. It's like, oh, that's nice. Nice to see you in your car. Wait a minute, baby Jeffy needs a bar of candy. It's like, baby Jeffy don't need no bar of candy. Baby Jeffy's got no teeth, and he shouldn't have sugar before age 3, if ever.
I saw my Grace costume on the regular show where a guy dressed up as a dad and had 5 ghost kids, each with their own bag of candy, but they're on like leashes made to pretend they're kids.
Oh, so that's good.
The candy. Oh, it's so good.
They were like puppets, kind of. Yeah, That's
but,
great.
Know, you have
to. Hey, your kids don't have any feet. Shut up.
But
very convincing costume.
But you always fall for it because, you know, you look at baby Jeffy dressed as a little pea pod or the little bumblebee or something.
Or Sweet Pea from Popeye.
Well, yeah. It's
hey, that's what Jason Marsden and his wife brought their kid as.
Really?
Yeah, they were Olive Oil, Popeye, and Sweet Pea. Not this year, last year.
You always fall for it, and you give up, you know, because the baby looks so cute.
I don't.
You give them. Well, okay, I'm just saying.
I'd be like, you know what?
There are some simple minds out there who give the full bar to the parent, and then the parent goes off and eats it.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. You know what? If they're going to get dressed up, and they dressed baby Jeffy up and brought him over here with his little propeller beanie or whatever the hell he's got on, you know what? God bless him. Happy Halloween.
Maybe they got turned down early. When I was a kid, I got turned down early on for being too big. I was like, no, you're not allowed to trick-or-treat, but all my friends are.
Yeah.
No, you got to be like 20. No, no, you're not.
Oh, you were tall when you were little, huh? How tall were you? Like, what? Because you're are you now? 6'3"?
I'm 6'4 and a half. Yeah. And I was 6 foot by the time I hit junior high.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That just sucks. Yeah.
Well, you know.
Well, I mean, it sucks and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome, but yeah.
It's awesome,
but like,
but
I can understand being the dad going, no, no, I want some more candy. I like this.
Yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, it's like handout night. You know, and I used to trick-or-treat with my little brother.
Balling?
My little brother or sister. And, well, no, not Bruce had given it up. I would go trick-or-treating with my little brother, Steve, you know, and I'd just stand off to the side and go, do you do all the work? You get the candy. And I go, what have you got there? I better.
What have you got there?
I'm the candy inspector. M&M's, you know, really got a.
This Three Musketeers looks suspicious.
Yes, this has a pin in it, Stevie. This
I better, you know, well, I'm taking you to the good houses, you know, and, and so this is my cut, you know.
My buddy Bizarro came over here 1 year for Halloween, and he goes, well, I just want to get this out of the way early. And he had taken an apple and stabbed Bic razors through it. Like, so they were very obviously in there, and he dropped it in our candy bucket. And he was like, this is my contribution. You said to bring some stuff for the kiddies. It was hysterical. It was really funny.
Well, I really like that.
He didn't do it. I mean, he actually had it out. No, of course not. No, no, no. It was just a joke, but it was very, he did it very good naturedly. He's a really good natured guy.
Well, I like that cartoon I did last year where, like, the dad is out mooching candy for his kid. And he goes to Polly the Witch's house, and she's onto him, and he like, forces her to give him candy, and she empties the whole bowl. She just gives him the whole bowl. Here, fine, take what you want. Give it to your kid. I don't care. Because he's going to sick the neighborhood association on her. Not that means anything. And by the time he gets home, he discovers all the candy is changed into baby food.
So I liked your 1% costume this year.
That was fun, nothing if not topical. Yeah. Well, what happened was we were both going to be asylum inmates, you know, as long as the Joker's taking over our house. We were going to be Arkham inmates, and I actually had an Arkham jumpsuit somewhere.
Oh, my God, he got in so much trouble.
What?
He came out Halloween afternoon. And I said, hey, it's time for you to put your scrubs on. Because I got him some giant orange, mandarin orange scrubs. And we were just good. And I bought a stencil to write Arkham, you know, on the back.
Yeah,
Arkham
saw yours. Yours was good.
No, it didn't.
No, you look
Lincoln
fine.
Spray painted me. Like, I still have spray paint on my arms.
Oh, really?
Because like, he just, our friend Lincoln was dressed as a gerbil. or a guinea pig, and he's an artist. He's a really good one. Yeah. I mean, he's not only an excellent drawing artist, but he's a sculptor. He's really talented. And he's a magician, too. He's an excellent photographer. He's good at everything he does. He's got a really great artistic eye. Yeah, he's a good close-up guy. But anyway, so Lincoln takes me outside, and he spray paints because I can't find the stencils anywhere.
Yeah.
But Paul comes outside with this really sheepish, apologetic look on his face, and he goes, I can't find my scrubs.
Well, that was like they'd been put somewhere, and I didn't know where they
were. And I said, where are your scrubs? And he goes, I don't know. And I said, you lost your Halloween costume. You lost it. All the costumes we have, we just bought. You lost it. I said, who does that? And he very sheepishly put his hand up in the air like me.
But I don't know where it went. To this day, I don't know what happened to them.
Like you said, they were on MIA. It's totally
I never
MIA.
Tried them on, you know. Wow. And so they, you know, that jumpsuit is around here somewhere. So anyway,
it wasn't a jumpsuit. It was a set of scrubs, top and bottom.
Well, I still
you don't even know. Maybe they're not lost. You just didn't know what you were looking for. If you were looking for a jumpsuit.
Well, I don't know where they.
It's okay. Halloween's over.
Halloween's over, and I don't need them right
but
now.
But your stand-in was good.
Well, yeah. I mean, I
this is funny.
Well, every time we throw a party, we work from dawn till party time on these things. So frequently.
Oh, I was so mad.
Like for our Christmas parties, I always have this fantasy image that I will greet the guests wearing, tuxedo pants and a white shirt and a bow tie with my family, tartan on it, the Scottish tartan and a smoking jacket, offering caviar and brandy. Welcome, come in for Christmas, blah, blah, blah. And as it is, I'm wearing big dog shorts and maybe one flip-flop and a t-shirt that barely covers my belly as I'm running around frantic trying to get ice and everything that we need. Yep. And this is Christmas Eve, so our friends come over. It's like, Merry Christmas. Like, hi, come on in. I'll just and I collapse.
And nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Because that's the kind of friends we have. They are that great.
Yes.
They don't care what we wear.
But it was the same thing for Halloween. Nice, I couldn't find my costume, so I put on, running shorts and a big Hawaiian shirt. But I did have the backup, which was we found this great mask, which was
is pretty epic.
A huge elephant head. But it's an elephant as if drawn by Thomas Nast,
and
the political cartoonist. And it's wearing a monocle and a top hat.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It looks like a caricature of a Republican, the Republican caricature. So I just put that on and I walked through going, I am the 1%, tax the poor, occupy this, and I'm coming in and I'm just acting like a Republican asshole. And it was, it got the point across. Everybody liked it. So
yeah, it's fun.
And I was able to make one or two passes of the living room before I passed out from wearing that.
I wondered how that was going to be, because it's one of those things, like every year when you're selecting your costume, he goes through, I think we've talked about this on here before. Mm-hmm. He goes through the costume cavalcade every year. And it's like, it starts in early September when they put them out. He's like, oh, I'm going to be this, and then I'm going to be that, and then I'm going to be this, and I'm going to be that. So now we wait until the week before Halloween to get our costumes, because they change so much. But he had bought this and he was like, oh, I'm going to be the 1%. I think that'll be really funny. And I said, that's fine. So we buy it. And then I realized that's kind of crazy because he's got to host a party.
And also you can't see out of that mask.
How do you host a party in a giant mask?
There are two little air holes down near the tusks, but he's got big molded eyes in the thing. And you really can't see out of that. But so it's like buying a piece of art,
Yeah, I tried on briefly after you took it off. And yeah, those eye holes are really hard to see through.
I found this one costume that I really wanted, but it was available only in Europe. And I tried to get in contact with somebody over in Europe. And, I couldn't find anybody anywhere. And I thought, maybe I should call one of the guys at Rocksteady and have it shipped to them and they can send it to me. But it's such a hassle. Why?
Yeah.
But I couldn't understand why they wouldn't ship it from France. But it was a Beagle Boys costume. And it was it was that big orange sweatshirt with, Beagle Boys incorporated on it. And then it had a mask and the little blue hat and, a dollar bill bag. And I guess you could go out and get a little goofy nose or something to add to it, but you really don't need it. And I thought that and a pair of jeans and Doc Martens and you just go or gardening gloves and you go, you're a Beagle Boy.
That's a good idea.
You know what I want to do is I want to find somebody who's going to send me this. Somebody out there can send me that costume. I'll pay for it. But I want
to... It's too bad Stefan moved to the States.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even check to see if he was back in France. But I think he's over here now.
No, he's here. He's in Wisconsin.
Okay. But, I think it would be the coolest thing. Now, this would really kick some ass for the Occupy Wall Street to do a flash mob of Beagle Boys on Wall Street. Everybody dress as members of Beagle Boys Incorporated and just assault Wall Street, There's always an army of them outside Scrooge McDuck's money bin. So why not do Occupy Wall Street with the Beagle Boys? They're just frantic to steal all that money.
Occupy Duckburg.
Yeah, Occupy Duckburg. I mean, I think Disney's missing out on a bet by not capitalizing. Disney's missing out on such a bet by not capitalizing on the Beagle Boys. Beagle Boys rock. Frickin' Beagle Boys. They were the coolest villains ever.
They're pretty still, great.
Yeah, this year was tough for costumes. I had trouble coming up with mine until it was literally like the last 2-3 days I was finally piecing it together.
So that was a great costume.
What you were.
Okay, well, I was Volkan, I believe is how you say his name.
Volkan.
Okay. It's or Brian Blessed from Flash Gordon.
Yes.
Gordon's alive?
Yeah. Or was it Volton?
Yeah, that's where I keep getting mixed up because of a little dyslexia. But Emily went as Flash Gordon. So yes. I felt I had to do a costume that compared. But I mean, the day before, I was going as Snake Plissken just because I had nothing and I wanted something bearded.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to shave.
Oh, sneaky, yeah. Sneaky. See,
you know, I was thinking about even Kevin Matsticks from Mage, the Matt Wagner comic, because he'd be pretty easy. But it's
fine.
You know, our party is probably the only one you could wear that stuff to, and people would get it. You know, they're like, oh, hey, oh.
Yeah.
I guess masquerade at Comic-Con.
You go as Kevin Smith and Clerks.
Yes.
Yeah, I just put on a big hockey jersey like back, me.
Backward baseball cap and the coat.
I did a sign. Like Bob one before, so I didn't want to repeat that. Just I had my Riddler costume on the backup burner.
And the Riddler was here.
I know, and I'm kind of glad I didn't wear it, because I had a great conversation with him, and I didn't want to seem too geeky.
Yeah, he wouldn't have. He would have loved it. He loves that stuff. Wally
Weird. We had a great conversation with
the Riddler and Arkham.
Yeah. He's such a nice guy.
Wally introduced me to Miss Piggy last week.
Nice. Yes, he did. I was sorry I didn't get to go, but under the circumstances, I'm glad I didn't.
Well, yeah, you had an injured pup to pick up.
Yeah, I went and did. I did puppy ambulance for Boston Buddies. They called me at. We were getting ready to go. Paul's going to tell you he went to the Tonight Show and saw Piggy, but he'll tell you about that in a minute.
Okay.
But they called me from Boston Buddies and said, we have this dog. He's a Boston pug, and. Mm-hmm. He's been hit in the face by a car.
Oh, it's terrible.
And we want to try to save his life, but we've got to get him to Anaheim.
Yeah.
And they said, we don't have anybody to drive him. I said, you do now. And I grabbed my keys and I said, I'll take care of it. So I just took off and did that.
Again, you are the most amazing person for the stuff you do for that.
No Boston dies on my time.
Yeah.
No, it just doesn't happen. Not if I can do it. So, but Paul went, and I want to talk about the Magic Castle too, because they had that big fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
I just want to remember to sneak that into this one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Wally came to our Halloween party.
Wally's amazing.
Yeah.
Wally's the announcer at the Tonight Show, and he actually has a puppet room in his house. So he's got a whole room of puppets.
He invited me over to see his Kaufman outfit, so I'm going to demand to see the puppet
Wally
room.
Would.
I'm going to demand it.
He's got Andy Kaufman costumes. He's got, I mean, he is
Adam
just...
West Batman costumes. Yeah. He's got you in the Yvonne Craig Batgirl.
In the head.
In the
It should also be said that Wally is always surrounded by amazingly, stunningly beautiful women.
Yeah.
Really?
He brought a girl dressed as Catwoman, which couldn't have been more perfect.
Yeah.
You know, to our house. Her name was Sarah, and she was...
And he was the dude.
Yeah, of course he was, because he's, you know, who doesn't want to walk around like that?
So we had Joker, Riddler, Harley Quinn, and Catwoman at our party.
We did.
Oh, yeah.
We did.
Too bad I didn't go as the Riddler then.
And a bunch of little kids dressed like Batman.
Yeah. Oh, that was cool.
Yeah. But anyway, Wally's got an incredible collection of puppets and everything. And so we were actually, I showed him my collection of Axtel puppets.
Was he impressed?
Yeah, he loved the wolf and the platypus. Yeah.
Well, and he didn't even see the half of them.
No.
Because you have boxes and boxes of them in storage. Right,
Steve
now.
Axtel is a local puppet maker. He's up in Ventura.
He's a very nice guy.
And he's amazing. He makes tremendous looking puppets and ventriloquist puppets. And the ventriloquist puppets or dummies aren't really like the hand-carved one, but they're hand-sculpted and made out of foam and plastic, and they look wonderful. They're somewhere between Disney characters and Muppets. But actually, they're their own unique thing. They're actually very cartoony
looking. Yeah, he's got a specific
design
on them.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I have his platypus, and I'm working up a routine about that. And also his old man puppet, and I'm working up a routine about that. So
yes.
Both are gorgeous.
But so, Miss Piggy?
Miss Piggy was one of the guests of the Tonight Show, and he said, you've got to come and see, you know, the Muppets, because we have Muppets, you know, all this month leading up to the release of the movie. So I went Friday, and I got to see them work Piggy on the stage, and then afterwards he introduced me to Eric Jacobson, who now operates Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
And he was fascinated to talk to. He inherited the role from Frank Oz.
Yeah.
And, you know, does a tremendous job and just... You know, terrific. And, you know, it's weird because the first celebrity I met years ago, very first celebrity in Hollywood was Miss Piggy. Frank Oz and Jim Henson.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, wow. That was years ago when I first came. 30 years ago, I got an invitation to go over and see them on a Muppets. But I've told that story before.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
And how nice
it all was. Comes back to Piggy.
Wow.
Yep.
So, yeah, the Magic Castle had a quite a thing.
Yeah, they had a Halloween scare, too.
They had something very ironic happened. So, this year, the Magic Castle had a huge Halloween event called Inferno, which ironically culminated in a real fire on Halloween.
I didn't know that existed.
Oh, called Inferno. There was devil and fire. They even had
they do it right at the Magic Castle.
They even had fire, like, lighting, you know, like, so it looked like the castle was on fire.
Oh, okay.
All week.
So you wouldn't have noticed when it actually
Well, it happened during the day.
Yeah, well, the fire happened during the day. What happened was they
during
were
during
the
same hour that Houdini died, what, 75 really? Years ago, 80 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
1926 was when Houdini died on Halloween.
That would have been 85 years ago.
The seance room is totally fine. There wasn't even any water damage in there. But I will say, I got to let me finish what first. But the Magic Castle had, you know, like I said, this huge Halloween event called Inferno, which ironically culminated in a real fire, which was not planned. but what happened was the roofers were on the top of the Magic Castle putting tar. They were repairing some part of the roof, and I guess when tar gets hard, they blowtorch it to make it soft again and malleable.
Yeah.
And what happened, it was not, as you would say, molto bene. They, it caught fire.
Yeah,
the tar that they were heating up.
Yeah,
it loosened up the tar, but unfortunately what the tar was attached to was wood.
Yeah. Well, no, it caught fire in the bucket, which spread out of the bucket onto what they'd already done, and the whole roof was on fire. But here's the thing, and here's why it was a blessing. First blessing, it was during the day, so only the castle staff was there.
So it was very easy to evacuate,
mm-hmm. and everyone was safe. There were not; there wasn't even an injury.
That's fantastic.
Second blessing, 125 firefighters responded when the call went out.
Wow.
And so they not only had people battling the flames, but people running tarps in and out, covering valuables to protect them not only from fire damage, but also from water damage. Absolutely nothing. Nothing that was like super valuable was lost.
Okay, the look on my face is of stunned that many firefighters showed up. Were they all not busy? Do they all care that much about the Magic Castle? I just don't understand.
It doesn't matter why it happened and they're lucky.
Wow.
The third blessing is it was the third floor that caught on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the third floor are the administrative offices.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. So the largest part
tell.
Of damage was caused to the administrative offices. So things like contracts, computers, desks.
Unfortunate.
But all of the memorabilia, I mean, they have one of Harry Houdini's original jackets.
Yeah.
All that stuff is okay.
Thank goodness.
You know, but it was fun. So that's the end of the fire story. But I was fortune telling all week downstairs, which was interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I did a Princess Magic show on Friday. I had, three shows a day?
Yeah,
two to three shows a day all Halloween week, which is expected. I had seances on Monday and Tuesday. Then I had fortune telling and a seance on Friday. And then fortune telling, and then a double shift of fortune telling, and then there were more seances in between there.
Right.
It was insane. It was absolutely crazy. But I loved it. But this past weekend, I had a Princess Magic show on Friday night, which was interesting. And then Sunday night, we did a benefit show for the Inferno Fund.
Oh, okay.
Which helped, it contributed right to the reconstruction of the castle offices. Yeah. And we raised quite a bit of money for them with this Edgar Allan Poe Night of the Raven show.
Oh, nice.
And all these magicians got together on a volunteer basis, and they do it every year. It's a fundraiser for the castle, and we all do an Edgar Allan Poe-themed magic trick. Mm-hmm. And last year and this year, with a different orangutan, I put a beautiful woman in an ape suit and do Murder on Rue Morgue.
Oh, wow.
And so I made an orangutan appear.
That's fun.
An orangutan waving a huge Sweeney Todd size razor, which is how he killed the old lady.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Night of the Raven is always a good show.
That's fun.
Yeah, I know. Everybody only just stops at the Raven, though. I think, you know, like you said, that people were mystified sort of by
the work.
They don't know the story.
They don't. And so I have to, it's interesting because you always have to assume that you have to perform for the least common denominator in your office, mm-hmm. or not in your office, in your audience. You know, not that people who haven't read that are stupid. That's not what I'm saying at all.
No, not at all.
But a lot of people haven't read Room Org. A lot of people don't know.
A lot of people haven't read a lot of Poe. They read Telltale Heart, and they read maybe Cask of Amontillado in high school or something. Because I had to read that in high school.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But I took a detective stories class. Oh, so okay. We did Room Org in there, the Dupin stuff.
Dupin, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. But Mrs. Stapleton, Romaine Stapleton, one of my Facebook friends now, because she's awesome. Best teacher ever. She's great. But anyway, a lot of people don't know mm-hmm. Room Org especially. And so when you do like Gold Bug or one of the offshoots, Black Cat, or something mm-hmm. that people are not familiar with, you've got to tell the story.
Yeah.
And last year I changed the trick because I had written this little almost mm-hmm. creepy, it's really creepy, Seussical kind of rhyme telling the story, mm-hmm. you know? And it basically touched on the clues. And if you know the story, it's like, oh, that's clever. But the audience was, they liked it because it was such a shock, but they were largely unaffected by it because they didn't understand what I was doing. And it was like, that was a really important lesson for me as a magician.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, oh, that's good to know. So this year I focused more on actually telling them the story, and they were really riveted, and it worked, and it was fun.
Yeah.
It's a privilege. I mean, my friend Micah Cover he's another magician. He's great.
Yeah.
And he puts it together and he ends the evening with his straitjacket escape to the Raven.
Right.
He recites the Raven as he's getting out of it. And he goes insane. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
He's got a guy named Duffy who, an excellent actor he tells the story of the Telltale Heart as Poe. And he comes out, he's a very charming Southern gentleman, and he gets crazier and crazier as he...
Yeah, but I think people need to go back to the library a little bit and, you know, start reading a few... You know, it's like there's so many other Poe works that are really well known that...
You mean the people that participate in this show?
Maybe.
That's fair. I mean, it's legitimate because there was a couple things that were had to do with the Raven. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's Night of the Raven, but it's more like a celebration of Poe. I mean, you know, it's like I haven't seen the Pit and the Pendulum in there.
There was a reference to it that... One of the guys did a Pit in the Pendulum thing.
Right. And, God, what are some other ones? Well,
there's so many.
Jonathan did, Ligia? Or?
No, he did Conqueror Worm.
Conqueror Worm, that's right. That was.
Yeah, cool. Jonathan Pendragon did my favorite piece of the evening, which was a beautiful Linking Rings piece to Conqueror Worm.
Yeah, that was
unexpected and majestic.
And there was a Gold Bug trick in there, too. Yep. So, yeah.
Yep, and Black Cat showed up.
Oh, the Black Cat? Really?
Yep.
Somebody did Black Cat. Okay.
Yep.
All right, I take it back. Okay,
I thought you were legitimate because there was a lot of the Raven in it, but I think that that's just, you know, they're sticking with the theme of the evening because the thing is called the Raven, so they're trying to do Micah right.
You know what, actually, Axtell makes a lot of bird puppets, and I think they could actually make an automated Raven.
Like a Haunted Mansion looking Raven.
A little bit like that, yeah. But they... So they could actually, maybe that's for next year. I mean, you should recite the Raven and just have it.
I can't do the Raven because that belongs to Micah.
Yeah, everybody else does the Raven.
I mean, everybody wants to do the Raven. And I don't. You know, I like doing things that are unusual and a little off kilter. I dig it.
Yeah.
I really do. So anyway.
So other Halloween fun. Anything else?
I think we covered everything. I mean, you know, you had a really busy time, but it wasn't really Halloween themed per se.
What do you mean?
Well, you were extraordinarily busy last week.
Yeah.
Doing everything that you do. It's like, it's so difficult because it's like, I don't even know what you do anymore. You're like, well, I'm working on this project and that one, and they've just hired me on this. And I'm just like, I don't know how you keep all your stories straight. Can you talk about that just really quick? How do you keep your stories straight?
It's
timing. Do you do note cards? What do you do? Because there might be an aspiring writer out there who really wants to hear that.
Well, I have to say that I'm dead without an outline.
Okay. You know?
I mean, this is no nuts and bolts stuff. But if I start writing anything, whether it's a script or a short story, and I don't have a good outline, I am dead. And quite honestly, there are plenty of times I do start writing without an outline. And that can be hard because then invariably I'll get into the story and then I'll have to go back and write an outline. That's if I'm working on a studio project, like if I was, you know, doing an episode of Tower Prep or direct-to-video or a Hulk episode or something, I would have to start, you know, with a rock solid outline, you know, because I insist that of any writer who works with me. But there are sometimes...
Well, they insist it too, because that's part of your pay schedule, right?
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, I have to know what the story is, you know, and I can make any story work. But then if I don't have an outline to start off with, then the first draft becomes the outline. And then I rewrite as I write, and then it always takes me longer to do it because then I'll write it through fast, then I won't like it, then I'll go back and rewrite till it's in good shape. And I, you know, so that's me working kind of without a net. Usually, and outlines are a pain in the ass because it's almost like, because you're writing the story and then you get that burst of inspiration. Yeah, but I've got a great script idea that I want to set down, or I've got a wonderful piece of dialogue, or I want to do this or that, or everything else. And then you get back into it, and then it like parts of the story, fall apart because it's like I don't have a structure for it. It's like making a cake without and going directly to the icing. You know, you haven't made a cake.
My question was, how do you juggle multiple projects?
How do I juggle multiple
projects? So the first thing you do is you make sure that you know what the story is. Each story has its own outline, which helps you know where the story's going so that you've done the percolation process and it stays focused as you're writing it. So you can drop one thing and pick it up if you've got a solid outline. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. But, you know, it's all scheduling. If I know that I'm writing an episode of Hulk, and then I block out time for that. If I'm writing a comic book, then I block out time for that.
Okay.
And I'm trying to be more effective throughout the week, whereas today I worked solely on Spider-Man. You know, today
you busted tail.
Today was
Spider-Man
my Spider-Man
today.
Day, and it wasn't like I'd been letting Spider-Man pile up. It's just there's a lot of stuff to do on it. So I said, well, the first part of the week is all Spider-Man. The second part of the week is all Hulk. And I actually did some producing work on Hulk today, and then later in the week I've got some other stuff going. But it's just, you know, you got to prioritize, and you got to leave huge chunks of the day free to do that stuff. And I just started working on a new graphic novel project, and I have to but that's going to be a real difficult thing to write. So I am I know I should be doing outlining, and I actually have a notebook where I've outlined this graphic novel in the notebook, but this is different. It's a hard story to write. It's a hard story to tell. It's a hard story to think about.
The graphic novel.
Yeah. I'm not going to say what it's about, except that it's an intensely personal story, and you're probably not going to see it for 2 or 3 years. And I had a meeting on it last week where it's back on track after a while. And part of the reason is it is just a very personal, hard story to write. But last night I sat down and wrote several pages of it, and you know, it's one of those things that where I actually, when I stopped working on it, I came to bed emotionally drained. I was actually crying because it's such a hard story to write. But
it's so good, and just what you're doing with it is so amazing.
I just have to tell this story. You know, I have to get it out of me.
Absolutely, it's part therapy for you.
Yeah, it is, and I hope a lot of
the Batman stuff is, because I've seen personal problems that we've had in life trickle into books. I'm not going to get into what they were and how they manifested themselves. But you really are, a lot of your pathos and a lot of your Batman writing comes from your personal pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of the wisdom that you give Batman.
Well, it's a very rich tapestry, you know. It's like...
You are a very rich tapestry. Well, and the way that you process your pain in your life comes out in a very creative way once you have processed it. But you have, as you said last night, it's like someone moved in down the street from you with a dragon, and you knew that dragon was down there. You knew it needed to be slayed because it was going to start eating all the maidens in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But you were like, I'll deal with that dragon when it starts eating maidens. Right now, I know it's there, but I'm not ready to deal with that today.
But it's a dragon, and the dragon, all respect to Anne McCaffrey aside, dragons exist to be slain.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a dragon that I've been meaning to slay for quite a while. And, and that's really all I can say about it. It's only very tangentially a superhero story, but it's, like I said, I'll talk more about it.
And we got sidetracked again. Because go ahead, Ezra.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're talking to these editors about all these different stories and stuff, do you ever have to refer to your outlines to keep it straight then? Or once the outline is done, it's ingrained in your head?
Once the outline is approved, then I've got a good template to work from. I mean, if there's a problem or if the story takes me in a different direction, I'll call up the editor and say, look, you know, you're going to get the script, but there's going to be a couple of changes in it, and here's why, and then I'll list, you know.
And is that okay?
Well,
sometimes they say it's not okay. But usually
if it's
you
a book,
ask for...
it's usually okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it's a book, it's
okay.
No,
they're usually fine with whatever changes because they're usually organic and they go somewhere because he's a seasoned writer.
Yeah.
But if he veers off the outline, he usually has to call and get executive approval, especially depending on the project. Like if you were writing something for Warner Brothers, and you said, this is going in a different direction. Is everybody over there okay with this? Because so many people have to stamp that stuff before it can move through to the next level. But that would come if the change is made. They would say, hey, you know, in the outline you've had this, and in the script we noticed it went a different way. Can we try it back that way? And then, you know, like it's a collaborative process. You were asking about the changes. Well, sometimes it's collaborative, but it depends on the nature of the project.
Well, yeah. Earlier this year, I wrote a direct-to-video for Warner Brothers, and it was a project that I can't really talk about by name just yet because it's going to happen, but it's been...
Why don't you talk about Catwoman instead, because that's out.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, okay, but I want to talk about this other project because it illustrates what we're talking about.
Yeah,
it was a project that I adored and still do, I think once it's finally produced and out, everybody's going to get a great kick out of it.
Yeah, it's fun.
But what happened? Well, actually, it was kind of like an embarrassment of riches because I was given a length to shoot for with this. I wrote it. The first draft came in. Everybody really, really liked it a lot. And then, you know, some of the higher ups read it and they said, you know what, this is a feature. So it's like, okay, the good news is we're making a feature. The bad news is you got to come up with like 25 minutes worth of additional stuff.
Yeah,
it's just stretched out a little bit. And it's like, okay, all right, the story can, you know, certainly calls for that.
Oh, yeah.
So I went back in and I discussed with the producers and director some ways to elaborate on the story. We came up with some very good, funny stuff. It is a comedy story. It's not what I'm usually known for. While I was writing it, I was taking it in different directions than I had agreed on the rough beat outline.
Right.
I submitted them.
Very different.
And then I would call them and I'd say, I have a sequence where this happens and these characters come in and this happens. And they were all up for it. Then, you know, as often happens in these things, it's a start, you know, it's a hurry up and stop business where in the case of this, it's sort of like, you know what, we're going to put that one on hold for a while. It could heat up right away, but for right now, you know, it'll probably be, you know, half a year to a year till it actually goes in the pipeline. So there's still work to do on it and still will get made, but, you know, it's a while in the future. Meanwhile, but you know, again, there's an example of good ideas happen. The structure is loose enough, so I was able to play with it a little bit.
And that's also one of the frustrations of freelance. I think that it warrants mentioning is the fact that for a young writer, you know, who was really looking at something like that to get their name made, or this is the first time that they're working with Warner Brothers characters and they're really excited, that would be devastating. Because even though you got paid and you're like, no, my ego's not attached to this. I know I wrote a really good script. I know it'll get produced eventually or it won't.
Uh-huh.
I got paid for what I did and I'm happy with that moving on.
Sure.
You know, because you've got so many other projects going on. But for somebody who might not have had that happen, they need to know that this is normal. They need to know that this isn't personal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you look at that and you go, my God, they're not making my cartoon anymore. What happened? And you call and you're like, I need that credit on my IMDb, or I really could use that credit on my resume. And they're like, well, you got paid for it.
Yeah.
We know you did it. You know, we know you did a good job. And that really is tough.
Well, they need to remember the magic words.
Which are?
Shit. Next.
There you go. Jonathan Pendragon's motto for failure.
Jonathan taught us the magic words, how to deal with disappointment. Two magic words. Shit. Next.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that's exactly what it is. You know, and you were pretty bummed for a day.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh man, I really want to see that get made. It'll get made eventually or it won't. It's like when I came home from my America's Got Talent audition.
Oh, yeah,
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, well.
You know, that was a disaster. I'll tell you about it some other time. It was hysterical. I mean, it was just, wow. It, probably one of the biggest failures.
Hey, but talking about successes for you, Miss Voice of Walmart.
No, I'm not just the voice. There's a lot of voices of Walmart.
But you did a couple of Walmart commercials for Thanksgiving coming up.
Yes,
right?
I'm very lucky. Yeah, there's a couple national ad campaigns you can hear my name on for Better Homes and Gardens.
Your name on it, your voice on it?
Not my name. Yeah. It's starting.
She just keeps saying Misty over and over again.
And as the candle holder on your Thanksgiving table, Misty Lee.
Yeah.
How unctuous and ridiculous is that? And didn't mean that.
Okay.
Yeah, you can hear my voice on that.
That's great.
Yeah, cool. I'm really lucky. They pay great and they're super nice people to work with, and I'm very, very happy. I just love working.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fact that somebody
gives me... You're
working
a lot.
I am, and I'm so excited. You know, the fact that people give me money to do shows and talk.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me with this? How did my life get
here? You worked like every day for the last 2 weeks on something, whether it was like a voiceover or a commercial.
I did all those things. Yeah, we were talking
seances or fortune telling. Man.
Yeah, I was at work every day, 2-3 times a day, all Halloween week, and I booked those Walmart ads in the middle of that Halloween week.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was just like boom, 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 go, 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 go. And he was like, where are you going to be? I'm like, I don't know. I'll see you when I get home. And he's like, what time are you going to be home? I said, probably midnight. And yeah. he was like, oh my God. And I, even the day that we were having the party,
yeah.
I took the day off the castle, which it was fine because it ended up being, like I said, on fire.
They
anyways.
Were having their annual barbecue. Yeah.
Oh, hey-o.
Yeah, okay.
I
think Harry came back. Harry came back out of smoke and didn't, and you know, just tossed the butt out.
Just like I said, now he was never able to visit the Magic Castle when it was the Magic Castle because he died in 36 and the castle became the castle. 26. Excuse me, 26. I'm used to talking about it in the seance 10 years later.
The thylacine died in 36.
Did the seances for 10 years.
Yeah, okay.
But Houdini died Halloween 1926 in Detroit, I should mention. Mm-hmm. Probably having eaten a honey sandwich if he knew it was good for him.
Well, he got punched in the gut, so I guess six
That's
of one.
That's not why. Yeah. He actually died from peritonitis.
I've had a honey. And... It's like getting punched in the gut. Okay, right. I'm sorry. Okay,
yeah, that's fine. But
you said the same thing about the Hunter hamburger. So
I really didn't, but and that's okay. Harry Houdini passed away, but but what I say in the seance is they tried to contact him for 10 years and he promised that he would come back. Now,
exactly.
At the 10th and final seance, when Betsy turned out the yahrzeit, if you will, the light she kept burning for him for 10 years, and whispered, "Good night, Harry," and walked away from the seance table, he didn't rattle the tambourine, he didn't speak through the spirit trumpet or pop the cap gun. However, the night she walked away from that table, the 10th and final time, they considered it a failure,
But.
A clear California sky broke and it began to rain.
Yeah.
And I have always held that if you were the greatest, most known magician in all the world and you could come back from the dead, would you pop a cap gun or rattle a tambourine or would you conjure up some weather?
Yeah.
And so when you blame Harry Houdini for the fire at the Magic Castle, I'm not going to say it wasn't him. But I will say his straitjacket survived the fire.
Yep.
So there you go.
I think that's a good creepy note on which to end this post-Halloween broadcast.
Fine by me.
Yes.
Good night, everybody.
Pleasant dreams.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter @RadioRashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.